welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into this month's Disrupt conversation with two home health executives, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. For our first ever joint podcast conversation with multiple guests, I sat down with Mark McPherson, who leads the Trinity Health at Home Network as president and CEO, along with Ruth Martinovich, who serves as interim COO of both Trinity Health at Home and Trinity Health Mid-Atlantic's Mercy Home Health. During this November conversation, we talked about the current COVID-19 spike and how home health providers are being affected. Apart from COVID, we also talked about staffing challenges, avoiding frontline healthcare worker burnout, and we even touched on Trinity's consolidation plan for 2021. Take a listen. Welcome one and all to another episode of Disrupt from Home Healthcare News. It's me again, HHCN editor Bob Holly, and I'm pleased to welcome two home health leaders to the podcast today. This is actually our first joint podcast that we're doing, so we have a big milestone that we've reached. First, we have Mark McPherson, president and CEO of Trinity Health at Home. Mark, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Also joining us today is Ruth Martinovich, interim COO of both Trinity Health at Home and Trinity Health Mid-Atlantic's Mercy Home Health. Ruth, thank you for coming on the podcast as well.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Mark, I think a congratulations is in order too. Last time we connected for a story, you were the interim president and CEO, and now sounds like you're stuck in the role for good.
Yep. So thank you. But yes, I have just was recently named the full-time and no longer interim CEO for Trinity Health at Home. So yep, everybody's stuck with me.
All right. Well, speaking of Trinity Health at Home, I think a good starting point for this podcast is just to go over your overall organizational structure for listeners who maybe aren't super familiar with Trinity Health at Home. Mark, you've done this for me a few times now. You're an expert at it. Could you just kind of walk the folks tuning in through Trinity Health at Home, Mercy, and how all the different pieces fit together?
Sure. So Trinity Health at Home is a national health ministry under Trinity Health Corporation. So Trinity Health at Home has 11 home care agencies, 6 hospice agencies. We span the country in that we have agencies as far west as Fresno, California. We have an agency that we manage in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We have agencies in the New England area. So we are geographically spanned pretty widely. So we also have agencies that we manage. That includes Mercy Home Health in the Mid-Atlantic area around the greater Philadelphia and Delaware area. We also manage St. Joseph Home Care in Syracuse, New York. So we have quite a few management relationships with other home care agencies that are scattered throughout all of Trinity Health. And we're in the process of bringing many of those agencies into Trinity Health at Home's corporate umbrella. So a little bit of internal consolidation is what we're going through right now.
Yeah, I think that's what you explained to me last time we talked. There's the home health agencies already part of the national umbrella, but then there are several that might be under the regional umbrellas. And I want to say it's in by July of next year, you're hoping to put those all under the national umbrella. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have a consolidation date of July 1, 2021. And the reason that's important is because that's the beginning of our fiscal year, and that just makes everything a little bit more well-organized from a budget and forecasting standpoint if we just do everything at the beginning of the fiscal year.
And again, I think last time we spoke, you know, once all of those agencies are consolidated, Trinity Health at Home already, you know, one of the really large home health systems in the U.S. becomes an even larger player, I believe.
Yeah, we'll move from the 8th largest home care provider in the country to the 5th largest home care provider in the country. So we'll have an average daily census somewhere around 7,000 by the time we pull everybody together in July.
Wow, that's exciting. Well, Ruth, let's bring you into the conversation. And I know you have a really good feel for what's happening on the ground across Trinity and at Mercy. As we're talking here today on November 13th, Friday, November 13th, actually, the U.S., you know, has surpassed 10 million total coronavirus cases. There have been numerous record-breaking days in a row in terms of new cases this November. Ruth, you know, are you seeing any impact from this new surge where you are?
Yes, most definitely. Our rates are climbing, as you know, across the country. The Midwest is the hardest hit at the moment, but Pennsylvania is starting to see a pretty significant increase in cases. New Jersey is starting to shut down. They're looking at shutting down schools. The infectious disease doctors are saying that things are climbing back up and that we really have to pay attention to what we need to do. We are seeing a surge in our patient population. Delaware County, where I reside, all of the hospitals yesterday were on divert in our county because they are at capacity with new COVID cases. So it is definitely back on the rise.
That seems like a really sudden change from just a month ago, because I think last time we spoke, you guys still had COVID cases, but I feel like it was going down or relatively stable, not on this upward trajectory that we're seeing.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the East Coast was looking a little bit more stable. We had not seen the cases surge as much as they're surging in the Midwest. But as of the last week, we're definitely seeing an increase and people are starting to get concerned that, you know, we need to continue to do what we've always done before they start imposing restrictions. You know, this, the usual, you got to wear your masks, you got to social distance. You know, there's everywhere we're starting to see an increase in cases.
Yeah, I'm calling into the podcast here from Chicago, and the mayor just yesterday announced that we have a more or less voluntary 30-day shelter-in-place order. So we're definitely feeling it here as well. Mark, anything else that you'd like to add to what Ruth just mentioned, you know, from your perch atop the overall Trinity Health Network?
Yeah, we actually had a meeting yesterday amongst the all the different regions within Trinity Health, and it was really pretty sobering to listen to how dramatically our case counts for COVID have increased over the last 6 weeks. And so in early October, I think, was the last time we talked. And we were, like you said, we were in a fairly stable situation. The number of COVID patients we are treating in our hospitals and in our home health agencies has either doubled and sometimes tripled in just the last 6 weeks. And so it's starting to really put some pressure on the healthcare system in terms of staffing in particular. We're in a good spot from a PPE standpoint, so that's not really an issue where that was early on in the pandemic. But right now it's really just, it's trying to make sure we stay well staffed. And that's a challenge because right now, this is the number of cases are climbing for patients. It's also starting to affect our caregivers. So it's definitely a major concern across the corporation.
So yeah, when you cite staffing as maybe the top concern, that it sounds like that includes staffing due to maybe clinicians actually getting exposed to the virus. Are there any other staffing hurdles? You know, we've at Home Healthcare News, we've heard that there have been a lot of home health nurses this year that have taken early retirement, or they might have kids at home who are no longer going to school, or they might have an aging parent who they want to deliver that hands-on care to while not caring for other folks. You know, what have been some of those specific staffing challenges?
Yeah, you nailed about every single one of them in terms of, you know, we've had numerous nurses or caregivers that have young children and therefore they need to stay home and help with schooling. We have caregivers who have their own family members they need to take care of. So it's putting an enormous burden on our caregivers because we're asking a lot of them right now. With every person that goes out due to either they have the virus or they need to quarantine, it's just spreading the work to that one fewer person. And so now everybody just has to step up a little bit more. And it's just becoming increasingly difficult, especially when you're 8 months into the pandemic. Everybody's exhausted. we've asked everybody to run through a brick wall two or three times, and now we're asking them to do it one more time. So it's, you know, we're definitely asking our colleagues to do a lot.
Ruth, what are your main priorities headed into the winter? And are those priorities any different than what they've been for the past 9 or so months? Because I know we also have the flu to worry about now.
Well, our priorities are pretty much the same as they were at the beginning of the pandemic. Our number one priority is the health and the safety of both our patients and our colleagues. We are seeing some colleagues turn positive recently, and it's ticking its way up a little bit, but definitely more than it was, say, in September. We continue to make sure that we're prepared for any surges, that we have ample PPE on board. We try to support our nurses with care initiatives, reaching out. And it's not just the nurses, it's the physical therapists, the home health aides. We're making sure they get enough education, that they feel confident in their ability to take care of these patients without becoming sick themselves or bringing the virus home. So, you know, the flu is also coming. It's going to be challenging times. So the thing that we're trying to do is support everyone as they work through this very difficult time.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, and this is one follow-up question that I just thought of, are you seeing any challenges with your staff getting access to patients maybe in assisted living or independent living? Because I know that that has also been a hurdle for a lot of agencies this year.
It is definitely a hurdle. Some facilities at this point are still asking that we do not come into their facilities. A lot of facilities are asking us to have our colleagues tested on a weekly basis to demonstrate they are COVID negative. So those restrictions continue to be able to impede some of the care that we could provide in these facilities.
And, you know, I this isn't nothing that we have to dive into, but one thing that's been concerning for me that I keep hearing is that PTs and OTs and rehab staff have really been shut out of facilities. At the same time, a lot of the COVID long haulers or who are just folks who are just leaving the hospital, they're really deconditioned, and those therapy services are very important. So that's just been one thing that's been interesting from my perspective to follow. Have you guys kind of noticed just like the increased role that therapy has played over this time, or has it been relatively as important as it's always been?
I actually believe that it's more important because a lot of these patients that have been in the hospital come home deconditioned and weakened. So there is a definite need for increased rehab services post-COVID. I think it's extremely important that those types of services be available to the patients that are recovering from this illness.
Yeah. Mark, Ruth, I'll open up this question to whoever wants to jump in. But, you know, Mark, you mentioned asking, like all home health agencies have had to do, asking frontline caregivers to have to blow through a brick wall a couple of times so far, and they're going to have to do it one or two times more. How do you keep those caregivers engaged, keep them operating at the highest level when they've had to do such amazing work for so long now?
Well, I think, I would want my, all of the caregivers out in the field to understand how much we are trying on a daily basis to make sure that they understand that they are well supported. You know, if there's anything that they need to be successful and to be feel like they have everything that they need, we will go to whatever lengths are necessary to get that for them. We're asking them to do something that's really challenging right now. This is something that no one has ever had to deal with in their healthcare careers and dealing with a pandemic. It's a lot to balance. You're trying to do a good job of taking care of an increased patient load. You're trying to make sure that your family is safe. You're trying to make sure that your own family is well cared for. So it's a lot to manage, and we have a number of internal resources that we've set up to try to make sure that folks are supported financially, emotionally, physically. And so anything that we can do to try to support our colleagues, we're going to do it. And we've tried to, in as many different ways as we can, to try to let the colleagues know that they are not alone out there. There is a large support network and behind them, and in the background supporting them. So we try to make sure that we do that as often as we can.
Mark, I know you mentioned how many patients that the Trinity Network cares for, I don't know if this is something that you could have offhand, but how many employees do you have? How many people out in the field do you have exactly?
On a combined basis, we, in terms of the agencies that we own, we're right around 1,900 to 2,000 colleagues. Yeah. And the vast majority of those are going to be out in the field. I would say 85% of those colleagues are out treating patients on a daily basis.
All right. Well, let's stay on COVID for another minute or two, but shift to some positive news. You know, I mentioned we're talking here on Friday, November 13th. This week, there has been some positive news to come out, some substantial progress around an effective vaccine. Specifically, Pfizer says their COVID-19 trial vaccine is more than 90% effective. One of the brightest pieces of news that we've gotten in a while when it comes to a vaccine. Mark, Ruth, could I each maybe get your reaction to that? What did you think about that news?
Well, personally, I'm really excited to hear it. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we would love to have a vaccine available to our clinicians and patients as rapidly as possible. Right now, we're still learning, you know, about the vaccine itself. We need more information before we as an organization and Trinity as a corporation can take an official position on it. It sounds promising, but, you know, I think there's still quite a bit of work to go, some more trials that need to be completed, you know, but certainly looking forward to when we have kind of the go ahead, say, yes, it works. And then we'll start thinking about how we do distribution and get everybody the vaccine as quickly as we can.
Ruth, anything you'd like to add?
No,
to that?
I agree. I think Mark covered it pretty well. It is pretty exciting. And I think it's remarkable that at the speed at which they were able to say that they're 90% effective. So, you know, more to come. So it's exciting.
What, Ruth, maybe let's start with you this time and then Mark, go to you. What do you guys think that vaccine distribution in a perfect world should maybe look like? You know, should home health agencies be prioritized? Should SNFs be prioritized? Obviously, the populations that you guys care for are incredibly high risk and really the people most vulnerable to the virus. Same with the people out in the field caring for these folks.
So I know that there is a prioritization work group that is already in progress saying these are the people that need to have it first. And I do think the people that are high risk should be near the top, as so should the first line responders. So I think what I've seen so far in publication about what they're proposing for distribution is appropriate, that you need to take care of the patients that are high risk, and the people that are going to take care of those patients need to be on the front of that distribution. So again, I think we're waiting to see what the recommendations are. I think they're appropriate. I think they're scientifically sound, and we'll follow, you know, those recommendations as they come out.
Mark, anything else to add to Ruth's answer?
Not really. I mean, Ruth covered it really well. I mean, we'll get guidance from the CDC and the state health departments in which we work, and we work in numerous states. And I'm sure there'll be some derivatives of or iterations of how the distribution plan will work in every state. It would seem logical that, as what Ruth said, is that you would start with the healthcare clinicians and the most vulnerable first, and that seems to be the plan that's being developed to date. So we'll wait and see how the final plan is developed, and then we'll follow that accordingly.
You know, looking back, what has been the single biggest challenge, in your opinion, during the public health emergency? Mark, I know you mentioned staffing. Anything else really jump out? Anything flying under the radar in terms of challenges that maybe people aren't talking about as much?
You know, I would say, I still firmly believe that the biggest challenge for this has been our the impact to our colleagues. You know, right now we're just facing a tremendous amount of stress and burnout. We've asked everybody to work at a very high pace for a very long time. And, you know, I worry about our colleagues just having to, and the stamina that they're having to show. I mean, they've been incredibly resilient. And I could not have asked for a better team to have out there taking care of our patient population. But I do worry about them. So, you know, we're going to try to make sure that everybody knows that they are being supported as well as they can. And but I think it's going to be a major challenge for us going forward and just to kind of make sure that everybody feels supported and feels like they can just focus on doing the job on a daily basis.
Yeah. Ruth, on the flip side of that coin, what has maybe been the biggest silver lining, for lack of better words, to come from this public health emergency? For example, you know, I know that this is an extremely negative situation, but it seems like there's more awareness for home health care service, for non-medical home care services, for what kinds of care could be shifted into the home. Has any kind of positive stood out to you?
There's a lot of social positives. I do think, you know, people are feeling more connected. They're supporting each other. And for home care itself, I think it's critically important to talk about the use of telehealth services. Telehealth services is a way to take care of patients without running the risk of increasing the spread of the disease. So, you know, we're hoping that telehealth finds its way into the mainstream of taking care of patients in the long term. We're going to see a shortage of healthcare workers. We're already seeing it. So telehealth is something that I believe that can be used efficiently to help take care of patients now and going into the future. And hopefully we'll see appropriate funding for these types of services.
Yeah, on the funding lines, I know that there is a bill that has been introduced that would at least provide Medicare reimbursement for telehealth during a public health emergency. I'm not sure there's been any progress since the bill has been introduced. Along those lines, Ruth, I think one of the things that has really stood out to me about healthcare generally is how fast the healthcare system could change when it has to. It really seems that like this huge aircraft carrier has been able to turn on a dime in a lot of ways that at least myself, I never really thought was possible.
I think, you know, what is truly amazing is, you know, the crisis hit and we didn't have PPE. We didn't, you know, we never had to don and doff so many times in our entire lives. And people stepped up to the challenge and the challenge, you know, the mother of invention, you find a way to make it work. You know, how do we get supplies to the front line? Well, we had delivery services of people would do a drive-by. We would put a little snack or a treat and along with their PPE. So we found ways that we never had to do before to make things work and to support the colleagues and make sure that our patients were taken care of. So I'm impressed by the ability of our colleagues and our staff and even, you know, people working out in the community of adapting to a situation that we never experienced before. So if we take some good things out of this is the ability to connect with people, to care for one another, and to know that you can adapt and innovate and make sure that things are taken care of as they should be. So from a personal note, I have a better relationship with my son. He came and lived with me for 3 months. I never would have had that opportunity. So you do have to find some of the positives that you don't think about necessarily.
Yeah. Mark, how about you? You know, has there been one silver lining to all this that really stands out for you?
I think it's how we've come together as an organization. You know, it's the pandemic has really forced us to rethink the way we do pretty much everything on a daily basis. And, you know, and we happen to be starting on the road to doing an internal consolidation, and it's really fast-forwarded those efforts. And so while we may not be legally and financially consolidated, we've begun to already integrate many of our practices, and we found that different agencies do things, they might be the best practice in one area where the other might be a best practice in another area. And we've been able to take some of those best practices and that have been isolated and now spread those across the entire organization. And so it's really fast forwarded our integration efforts, and it's, have been able to implement some things more quickly than we probably would if it hadn't been a situation where a pandemic was involved. So just the speed by which we've been able to pivot and constantly reevaluate and be able to put things in place has been amazing.
Yeah. We're about out of time. Mark, maybe in just a minute or two, besides the consolidation plan for next year, putting COVID aside completely, what else is in store for 2021?
I think it's going to be a year
Hopefully, one where we'll have a vaccine. That would be wonderful. And hopefully we can start to return to some normalcy here, you know, sometime in the first half of the year. Certainly, we're going to be, you know, wanting to complete our consolidation and integration efforts. That's a huge undertaking for the organization. You know, and then we're going to be looking for other opportunities to grow as an organization. We're always looking for ways to expand access to care within the organization and into the communities in which we serve. So we're going to want to try to do that to an even greater extent in 2021.
You've been listening to Mark McPherson, President and CEO of Trinity Health at Home. Also, Ruth Martinovich, Interim COO of both Trinity Health at Home and Trinity Health Mid-Atlantic's Mercy Home Health. Ruth, Mark, hope you guys stay safe throughout the winter. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.